This podcast is part of the Neverland Network, where faith meets video games, movies, and fun. Find more shows like this at neverlandpodcast.com.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Hello, I am back. Probably sooner than you expected. I bet you were thinking it'll be every 2 weeks. But no, I'm back again for the following week from the previous show because we're not going to have a Watching Movies with my pastor this week as things have worked out kind of the wrong way. But a lot happened this week, and holy cow, we got to get into and talk to some of the things that we experienced in the news and different things that have happened. We have to be able to talk about this, and so I had to come along and jump into Neverland again. I know this is the Fandom Nexus, but you know, it's feel like going to Neverland each time. We've got our happy thoughts. We've got our pixie dust. We're still going. We're going to have a little bit of fun today. We're going to pay tribute to the late, great Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, because, I mean, even in my age and Gen X, we grew up with the Beach Boys. That was just the way it was. Pardon me while I take a sip of my hot cocoa. It helps keep the throat warm when you do this sort of thing. We have a lot of different news, though, to talk about. I'm going to get into a little bit of the fact that there was a How to Train Your Dragon film that just released. I want to look at what people are saying about the movie a little bit with you. I, of course, haven't seen it. And also, do you realize that 70 years ago, two dogs shared a spaghetti kiss thanks to Joe Grant's 1937 sketches and Ward Grain's 1945 story? Disney delivers its first Cinescoped classic on June 22nd, 1955. So, yes, we have an anniversary, 70 years of Lady and the Tramp, and I want to celebrate that because I love that movie. And, yeah, I know we're not a Disney show anymore, but we still love some vintage Disney. And when there's something cool that we got to celebrate, I'm certainly going to jump in there and do it. And hopefully you're going to have some fun with me because that's the point, right? All of us having a good time. But let's do what we normally do. What have I been watching? I can't think of a single thing other than YouTube that I have been watching this week. So we'll just move on to what have you been playing? So here's the thing. And I should have said something probably last week. So Magic the Gathering has been releasing, and I haven't, you know, I didn't really pay attention except for like in the 90s. I was playing Magic the Gathering in school. Then I had this really cool deck that I'd put together that somebody stole. And it was a great deck. And I really loved it. And I kind of was soiled for a little bit. Oh, well, I don't know, soiled is the right word for it. But then I had, you know, some friends I'd play with at home and in my neighborhood. And, you know, we were playing Magic. And then I kind of had stopped playing. And then I don't know at what point I kind of was trying to get my wife into it a little bit. I thought, you know, we'll show her something. There was something cool going on. I don't remember what. And I actually do have some cards from a convention, some little decks that were like promotional decks or something I got at a convention for Magic the Gathering. But I haven't really paid attention. And I miss out. There was a Lord of the Rings set that came out. I don't know when, but they recently released a Final Fantasy collection of cards. So they got themed sets of cards. I mean, it used to be you'd have the Ice Age or all these different things, different bits of story that would happen, kind of like World of Warcraft has different stories or whatever that goes on. So they have these different sets they put out, but they've had a Lord of the Rings. Now they have a Final Fantasy set. And of course, I wanted one. So I had kind of, you know, saved aside my fun money and I was ready for it. And oh my goodness, I had a bit of an adventure. So I was like, okay, let me pre-order some of this on Amazon just to make sure I have some. But then I realized with GameStop, where I have an account, I'm a pro member. That way I get $5 a month. Well, there's $5 discount right there. And when I spend money there, I also get like reward points that I can turn around for discount money. And so I thought, well, hey, I'll get a pretty good discount. Plus, Making a purchase over there gives me more reward points, so I get a discount on it, and it also gets some more reward points where I get another discount for some other stuff. So I thought, let me go and get it from there. Well, I was looking on their website and never saw anything about their getting a pre-order in or even the day of release, which was, I guess, last week. What day is it? It's Tuesday, so I guess it was last week. Yeah, on Friday. There was nothing about them having the release on available to purchase online on their website. Now, I did find out on the same day of release that there was a big Pokemon set coming out. And so they were going to have, you know, not really a release party like I've been to for like Spider-Man 2 came out on PlayStation 5. And I went to a release party that, you know, you show up there around about 11 o'clock, 11:30 or whatever. And we goofed around until midnight when we've got to purchase our copy of the game or receive our copy if we'd already paid for it. Like I had, but they weren't doing anything like that. They were doing the store opens at 11 and they were expecting people to be in line for Pokemon cards and whatnot. So I was at work. I was about 26 minutes over on my time anyway last week. So I thought, OK, I'll just take an hour long lunch early. I left work about 10:45 or so. So I would get to the store around about 11 o'clock. I figure I'd probably be okay because everybody's probably going to be there for Pokemon cards and not for the Magic cards. And I was right. There was a line of people in front of me for Pokemon cards. They tell me, though, when I get there, the guy who's supposed to be opening this location has already come by at about 10:50. And even though he's supposed to open the store at 11, he didn't have the keys. So he had to drive to the North Platte or something, or North Shops location in St. Joseph to get the keys from another store location. I'm like, well, why didn't I just go to that store, I guess? But I didn't know where that store was. I've never been to that one, but I knew where this location was. So I was like, fine, I'm here. So he comes back to the store about 11:15. He's already 15 minutes late of opening the store. Opens the door and he says, okay, give me about 15 minutes. I got to go and open the safe and all this kind of stuff. He closes the door, goes in to do that. This one lady in front of me turns around like, is anybody actually intending to pay with cash, though? Really? And we're all looking at each other like, nope, who pays with cash, right? Unless you're on Dave Ramsey's program. So we figured he didn't need to be doing that, but we had to wait. And then when he did finally, a little after 11:30, finally get going, he was only letting in one person at a time. Yes. So I was a little concerned, like, okay, I got to go one person at a time. And, you know, everybody knew what I was there for. And I kind of looked at everybody who came out. It's like, okay, it looks like they bought that big Pokemon set. And so when I got in there, I was able to get one of everything that I wanted to get. I didn't get a command deck. That's $80 just for a command deck. I got like a starter pack, which turned out to work out very well. And a booster bundle with a bunch of boosters, all kinds of fun stuff in there. And then a collector's bundle so I can get some special stuff. And of course, y'all know that I'm a big Aerith fan. So what card did you think I wanted most that I did not get? That's right. I didn't get a single Aerith card. I got some of her particular abilities, like a big cure card. And there's a rescue Aerith mission card, that kind of thing. But I didn't get any of Aerith's actual cards. So, and there's like the variety, because there's one where she's the commander. You put her in your commanding decks, which I have not really. I only learned a little bit. I talked to a guy in line about it because he was kind of interested in command decks. So I did find a website, tcgplayer.com, not endorsing them at all. I mean, but I did go and you can find the particular cards you want and order those cards. So between that and the other, I'm flat busted. I've spent all my fun money, which there is a convention going on. Up near the airport around here, and Jim Cummings is coming to town and staying the wrestler, but I'm not going to have money to get tickets, so I guess I'm not going. But now here's the fun thing. Okay, so we get into what I've been playing. These being special cards, and I haven't really played Magic in a long time. I wanted to keep them neat. I kind of feel like I'm going to put them in card sleeves. I want to be able to look at them, so I opened the packages, of course. But I want to keep them nice. I don't really want to play with them. I want to like, oh, look at how cool these are. Because, you know, the artwork is really cool on these. And they're stuff from the Final Fantasy series. And that's very cool. I got a foil covered Tifa card and a foil Commander Cloud and Commander Sephiroth card from that starter pack. I mean, just cool stuff. So I'm pretty happy with that. But the starter pack, because there's like two decks in there, each deck came with a code that you use on Magic the Gathering Arena. And from the arena, you use these codes. Each one of those codes unlocked both starter decks. So I gave one code to my wife to have her, you know, she can start an account so she can play. And I found out now with Magic the Gathering Arena, if you know the email address of the person that you want to friend, you can put them on a friends list, and then you can actually go and you find out they're online. You can send them challenges so you can play with your friends. And when I play things online, I prefer to play with my friends or against a bot. Although I played a stranger a little bit, just, you know, because I'm doing the thing where you play the, all these starter decks that you get. It can give you a lot of free cards, but you can buy virtual cards to play on the game. But I had a guy that I guess he just got overwhelmed. I had some pretty good luck of cards, and he jumped right out of the match on me. But I've been having fun playing with the Cloud deck. The Cloud deck is really good. The Sephiroth one is pretty good, too. But I've been having more fun with the Cloud deck playing against the bot. And I played it against my wife, and I won. She picked a green deck. Had a couple of really big dinosaurs and souped them up, but I actually had a card that I could force her stuff to tap so she couldn't attack me with it, and she was kind of mad at me, but I won. You know, it's like, that's the way this game works, honey. Yeah, so, but, and if any of you want to play with me, I tell you what, my email address is a little weird that I've got signed up for the account. It's one of my personal accounts. If I post it into the show notes, hopefully I don't get a lot of spam there, because you put an email out there, you get spammed, which is what happens to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com, because it's out there in public for y'all to send emails to me. Which, hey, if you happen to play Magic the Gathering, send me an email about it. Let me know what maybe you picked up some of these Final Fantasy cards, or maybe you're excited. I just found out there's a Spider-Man set coming out in September. So guess who's going to buy some of that? Yeah, that's right. Me, a guy who calls himself a spider pan, you know. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited for that one, too. So if you want to be able to play with me, I think I want to put my email address in the show notes. But if I don't, I'm glueband@yahoo.com. Now, it's going to spell like glubbend. I was in a band called Glue without the E. Well, all right. So I kept the email address from I guess been 25 years ago, at least. I've had this for over 25 years, this email address. And so I just used it, even though the band Glue does not exist anymore. But I played in a band over 20 plus years ago, long time ago. So, you know, I made an email address for the band. I needed an email address. And then when the band was gone, I was like, I'll just use this one for myself. So I did. And so that's what I use. So it's glubband@yahoo.com. If you enter that in, if anybody plays Magic the Gathering Arena, send me a friend request. I'll just go and start taking friend requests. I'll play with some of you guys. Send me all. If you guys are more veterans at Arena, you're probably going to destroy me, but that's okay. We'll have some fun, you know. So yeah, send me a friend request. I'll find some people to play with. We'll pretend we actually know each other. You know me, I guess. I don't necessarily know you, but maybe I do. Maybe you're somebody that we know each other. And either way, I just thought it would be fun to play with people. But that's the long story short of that. Took me 10 minutes to get here. That's what I've been playing this week. So let's move on, shall we?
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Really need to update that. You might have noticed I've got an updated logo, some updated cover art. There in Apple, maybe with your whatever you're using to listen to your podcast, you've seen some new art, trying to do some brighter colors, show some of my influences between video games, cartoons, TV shows, that kind of thing, movies, trying to put together a fun image. I was trying to get some AI to help me out and cartoonify this for me, but I couldn't get it around anybody because, you know, there's copyright that AIs were like, oh, I don't know about this. And but I did get a good cartoony version of myself. That's it's still different. It's not the one like Philip has drawn me, but I'd like to have Philip draw the thing, but he hadn't had the time. You know, he is a pastor and everything, so I would like to have him draw it. But for now, this is a kind of a fun little picture I've kind of put together. So I think I'm just going to use the regular one for the cover this week, so you get to see it. So, yeah, a lot of things changing this week. We're going to have some fun. But the one thing that I want to get through is something you probably already knew about, but I want to talk about it anyway. So in a galaxy not so far away, we're heading back. Spaceballs 2 is officially in development for 2027. Mel Brooks has returned as Yogurt. And in a surprise twist, Rick Moranis is suiting up again as Dark Helmet. And this is his first live action role in nearly 30 years. Now, Bill Pullman is coming back as Lone Star, and he's actually his son Lewis is going to play. Apparently, this is what the rumor is, that he's going to probably be playing his on-screen son, right? And Keke Palmer is joining the cast. I think people have been thinking she might be like a new version of Dot Matrix because Joan Rivers has passed. I haven't heard for sure that Daphne Zuniga, I don't know how to say her name, I'm sorry, that she's coming back, but I bet she is. So they dropped the sequel's tagline in a full Brooks fashion, a non-prequel, non-reboot sequel, part two, but with reboot elements, franchise expansion film. And I mean, that's just absurdity and you have to love it. We are hoping he is going to call it The Search for More Money. So now Mel lit things off with a parody Star Wars crawl, saying, of course, I told you we'd be back. And fans couldn't wait. And someone even made a hilarious Star Kilmer popcorn bucket already that it's trending. It's safe to say the Schwartz is strong with this one. So what are your hopes for Spaceballs 2? And with Rick Moranis, do you think he can still live up to legacy? It's been a long time since he's acted. Do we really need a dark helmet bucket? I think so. So send us your thoughts, podcast@everlandpodcast.com, or hey, go onto our Facebook page and let us know any thoughts that you have. Now, here's a few extra little bits of information pulled from various sources. Most of the information I have so far was from Decider. Hollywood Life had reported that Mel Brooks is 98 and he's producing alongside Josh Gad, and directing is being held by Josh Greenbaum. Now, I'm not familiar with Josh Greenbaum. It's really a lot to live up to Mel of what he did. And in fact, here lately, I've been seeing there was a new trailer for The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson, and Seth MacFarlane, of course, is helming this one. The Zucker brothers are not exactly on board with the film. And after seeing the trailer, there was at least one joke that I think went further than the Zucker brothers would have gone. So I'm a little doubtful. I mean, I still want to see it. I'm kind of excited for the idea of a Naked Gun movie, I guess. And I'm hopeful it's going to be good. But I'm a little concerned about Seth MacFarlane's direction compared to what the Zucker brothers would have done. But, you know, he's got reputation. He's done some funny stuff. So it could be good. So we'll just go with that. So, yeah, Rick Moranis has not done anything since 1997, according to People.com, but he is definitely coming back as Lone Star. Keke Palmer, of course, is a new addition. It was also mentioned at People.com, and we basically got this announcement on June the 12th, and it was basically just telling us on Twitter. It was all over social media and just tell us that we told you that we'd be back. But anyways, let me stop a quick moment and tell you about Dubby. Go to Dubby.gg, use the discount code Neverland, or if you visit neverlandpodcast.com, I have a big logo. Heck, it's even in your show notes. You'll find a link for Dubby. Dubby, if you need energy, if you happen to be a gamer, you need energy and you don't want the jitters from the caffeine and all that bad stuff, this is nice, healthy nutrition and vitamins to give you the energy you need. And it's a nice powder drink mix. You just mix it in some water. You can get some little bottles and everything for you to mix it up in. Lots of fun different things. Lots of fun different flavors. That is Dubby. Jump right in there and take a look. And of course, you are helping out the show when you do that. Now, some of the other news that's been happening, and this not so much news as it is more a tribute. But I have to say something because
the Beach Boys are great American music.
Thank you, Jackie. That's right. Beach Boys is great American music.
Beach Boys is dope.
I love Beach Boys.
There you go. See, and I feel like I kind of grew up with the Beach Boys, and I bet you did too, in whatever fashion. I mean, their heyday was already kind of done, I guess, by the time we were born. I mean, I remember Kokomo had come out in the 80s. I actually tried to lip sync for that for a competition in middle school. Didn't do a very good job. I was kind of a shy kid, would you believe? Shy kid, so you don't really get out there, but I guess things change. I've always been a bit of a performer. I just, by myself, I should have maybe coordinated with some people to do a little something, kind of dance a bit or whatever, but I was nervous. I was a shy kid. You know, I was not quite the person I am today, I suppose. But, I want to give a sonic salute to Brian Wilson. He's the genius behind the Beach Boys and the architect, really, of the California sound. He was born June 20th, 1942 in Hawthorne, California, and he revolutionized pop music with lush harmonies, studio innovation, and emotional depth. He, of course, was a co-founder of the Beach Boys. He was the primary songwriter. He's the producer and arranger by the mid-60s. One of the landmark albums was Pet Sounds in 1966, The Unfinished Smile. He was pioneering in some studio techniques, including modular recording, unconventional instruments, and symphonic pop. He actually overcame mental health struggles in the 60s and 70s, returning strong in later decades. Now, I've got a list here of some of the top five Brian-driven Beach Boys songs. And I'll start with number five, Surf's Up, which is a haunting beauty from the Smile Sessions. I'm not sure if I'm entirely familiar with that song, but I did watch it. If anybody likes to watch Professor of Rock on YouTube, he did a great tribute, and I think he played a clip of that. But tender falsetto and heartfelt lyrics can be found in Don't Worry, Baby. Now, I know you've heard this one, that one. I'm not going to sing it for you. I won't sing it near as good. And I can't do that falsetto that right. I would sound pretty, I'd like sound more like a weird, bad version of the Bee Gees if I tried to do this. And then Wouldn't It Be Nice is at number three, The Bittersweet Optimism. This was found on the album Pet Sounds. And this is the song that I guess has been in my head throughout the week. Wouldn't it be nice if we were older, then we wouldn't have to wait so long. And isn't it nice that you used to have songs of love and romance that was geared towards marriage? Right? And not just a hookup. It was a different time. You know, we didn't have this hookup culture and violence in songs and, you know, modern music. Modern music. I don't want to get on a tirade on that, but yeah. Then, of course, the studio masterpiece with a theremin in there and had some modular cuts too. Good Vibrations, which the theremin, I think that's probably the first song with a theremin we probably would have all heard. That we just didn't know what a theremin was at the time, but that weird sound was a theremin, and it, for Good Vibrations, it somehow or another it just made sense to use something like that, you know, electric with vibration, and you had that kind of driving doo-ga-doo-doo-ga, you know, bass kind of line. Then of course the orchestral wonder and emotional resonance of our number one of our top five Brian driven Beach Boys tracks, God Only Knows. Great little tune there. I don't know where his faith was. He grew up Presbyterian, but he'd say that music was the voice of God, and that God was in the music. So I don't know what sort of faith he has, but, you know, God only knows. And that's kind of solves that whole thing. Okay. Now, I do want to be, well, you know what? This is almost like a review, so let's hit this button.
Want to see a movie?
Yeah. Any good?
It was bad.
I'm fuzzy on the whole good, bad thing.
My eyeballs could have been sucked from their sockets.
I like it a lot.
The best movie ever made.
A Fandom Nexus movie review.
So, in the realm of movies that were too soon to be remade, I mean, we already had Lilo and Stitch, and I've heard like kind of some mix of people kind of liked it. It was different, although some people said that it didn't seem as selfless with some of the characters compared to, you know, they're more selfish than selfless with some changes. I don't know. I don't plan to see it. I own a copy of the animated and I love it, and it's not that old. I don't see the sense of remaking anything that was so well done that we don't need it, you know, for the previous, or even was only out within the last, you know, what, 20 years or something. You know, if it's not that ancient of a movie, I mean, if it's a really old movie, I could kind of see remaking it, but remaking it at a time where you can still get the original director to come back to make it means it's not really been so long that it needed a remake. I mean, remakes really only fit with somehow or another, you can do this story somehow better because you have better technology now. Which is why I'm okay with video games being remade, because video game technology advances. Like, oh, we can do a little bit more. We can do it better now because we can, you know, update some game mechanics. We can use better graphics. So games get remastered, they get remade and everything. And it also helps because you sometimes don't have access to those old games anymore because how game systems changed. But we have access to Lilo and Stitch, the original animated film. And so do we also have access to the entire trilogy of How to Train Your Dragon. There didn't seem to be much point in a live action other than like Disney. I feel like their remakes are doing an apology tour. I'm not going to get into that. And this seemed like, oh, look, we can race swap somebody. That doesn't make sense for them. But then they made an excuse, apparently, from what I've been looking. I've been watching stuff online, getting people's perspective. That they added some bits to the movie to say, oh, no, we're making excuse that there's tribes within these Norses or Vikings, whichever one. There's different tribes, so they can be different, which didn't add anything to the movie. It just came up with an excuse for why you did some race swapping. And pretty much that same person says, like, the performances seemed kind of weak other than Gerard Butler, who's just reprising his role, because you know, it's kind of soon to make a remake if you can get the same actor to play the same role, you know. And really, it's almost other than that, shot for shot, although they did say that there were some dropped lines that kind of helped set up some of the finale. Those lines were missing. So, yeah. Let's look at the review scores. The Rotten Tomatoes, critics have been giving it a 77-80% certified fresh from about 180 reviews. People who went to go see it are giving it 98-99 on the popcorn meter. Metacritic has got a 61 out of 100, which is generally favorable. Metacritic users, 65-70 out of 100. It was directed by Dean DeBlois. I don't know how to say his name. And it's filmed in Northern Ireland. Practical Viking village sets, real-time CGI, toothless. Critics say it's visually strong and plays it safe. Fans are raving. It's a heartfelt love letter to the original, especially Hiccup and Toothless Bond. Although I've had other people say, like, no, the Bond was kind of missing because we're missing some dialogue. Notable shifts are it's a darker tone, more realistic in the action because, of course, you have humans and not cartoons. And Astra was kind of giving a bit of an upgrade, making her more of a co-lead. It did make an $84 million opening weekend, according to Rotten Tomatoes. So, I mean, it's made money. The people who wanted to see it went to go see it. I don't have the time to waste. I don't go to movie theaters so much anymore. I'm noticing it's expensive. It's more expensive than it was. It went up during COVID, and it seems like they just decided they weren't going to bring the prices back down. And when I do go, there's if you go at the wrong time, you have a bunch of rowdy teenagers. And I think that the sample we got here was Minecraft when you had like almost riots at certain points of the movie. I'm glad I didn't go. But I've been to movies now where there's a bunch of kids that they're just there fooling around. Kids are different now. We wouldn't have done that when I was, you know, in that age. I would never have acted that way. People pay good money to go to a movie. And if I have to pay that money, I don't want a bunch of rowdy teenagers that are just screwing around. They're not there to watch the movie. They're just doing whatever. That's not worth it most of the time for me. I have to really want to see something now to go to a theater, which kind of put a damper in how I used to do this show. But to have something that is supposed to waste of my money, and I feel like a waste of my time because I own a copy of the movie. If I want to watch it, I can sit at home and watch it. And I like watching movies at home because I can make whatever food I want. I don't have a bunch of crazy kids and everything. I can just sit and have a decent time watching a movie. Now, it went fairly well with that last movie Heather and I went to go see. We went to see the King of Kings animated film. There was one kind of upset baby in there, but I gotta say, Christian families run a little bit differently. It seems where you discipline your kids and they know how to behave, you know, in a movie theater. But we went to what was the movie? Like Haunting in it was an Agatha Christie adaption. But there was just kids just hooting and hollering and just screwing around the whole time and ruining the movie for us. And I do not want another experience like that. And this is the same type of behavior my wife has dealt with as a teacher that made her quit. She's tired of these kids these days. So, all right, I feel like I'm a grumpy old man complaining about kids, but I mean, there's these kids these days. So I have to really want to go out to a movie to go and see a movie. So I'm still excited for Superman. I'm totally going out for Superman because that'll be fun because Philip and I will be able to go and maybe Seth will come with us. I am looking forward to that one. Fantastic Four, I'm still very iffy, but I got to go see Superman. I am very excited for Superman. I've actually even been watching some very interesting videos of, and it's part of, you know, part of the things that the people who enjoyed the Zack Snyder version of Superman, they're probably more cynical. Yeah, that's because it comes from a very cynical point of view. And it's like, this is not who Superman's supposed to be. Superman has a level of optimism. He's always working for the good because it's the right thing. Not for any selfish motivations or anything like that. He doesn't go for revenge. He's not Batman. He does it because it's the right thing to do. He is a virtuous and idealist type of superhero, kind of like Spider-Man. And we're getting back on track with that idea from what we're seeing of this one. And I'm excited to see it. So I will be going to a movie theater and there might be some young people in there, but I think hopefully Superman should be a movie that people are excited to go see. So people are going to be interested genuinely to go and see the movie, except for the Zack Snyder people who are upset that it's not Henry Cavill. And for some reason they wanted a cynical Superman, which is not Superman. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about Lady and the Tramp.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a preview of the motion picture event soon to be seen in this theater. We would like to show you and tell you something about Walt Disney's Lady and the Tramp. It's his happiest motion picture, a story about dogs. Open your heart and build some glowing memories as Walt Disney takes you into that wonderful world you always hoped did exist and never knew for sure until now, the world of dogs. To anyone who's ever owned a dog, loved a dog, or just wanted a dog, this picture is yours, heart and soul. You'll meet Lady, the belle of the social set. She was beautiful, innocent, intelligent. And besides, she owned the nicest family in town. Lady was the catch of the season. That is, until the day the Tramp came into her life. Tramp. Soldier of fortune, the Casanova from the wrong side of the tracks who wore no man's collar.
It's what they do to your happy home. Move it over, will you, friend?
You'll meet Jock, officially known as Heather Ladd of Glencairn, of the Blue Blood Glencairns, who collected blue ribbons, silver cups, and bones.
That's a grand sight.
There's Faithful Trusty, the bloodhound of the Old South, but now given to dreams of faded glories. And there are the rollicking, roistering boys in the back room down at the dog pound. Boris, remnant of the old aristocracy who has fallen on evil days.
He's like Gorky says in Lower Depths, quote, miserable being must find more miserable being. Then he's happy.
Pedro, whose visa and luck ran out at the same time.
And my sister, Rosita, Chiquita, Juanita, Chihuahua.
And Peg, slightly shop-worn soubrette from the Dog and Pony Follies, who knew many things. One of them, how to sell a song.
If he's a tramp, he's a good one. And I wish that I could travel his way. Wish that I could travel his way. Wish that I could travel his way.
And you'll meet Mr. Busy, the eager beaver.
6 foot six and 7/16 inches.
And the pair of mischievous Orientals, Cy and Am.
We are Siamese, if you please. We are Siamese, if you don't please.
It's Easter, it's Christmas, it's New Year's Eve. All the merry celebrations of your life rolled into one happy entertainment as Lady and the Tramp take you into their enchanted world.
Okay, can I just say that I find it a little bit comedic that they're talking about it being its happiest feature and then this trailer is showing all these crying dogs in the pound.
Oh, that part ripped me up. I watched it.
Oh, guess what? I am joined by my wife, Heather, now, the bio nerd.
Hi.
Or the Wendy nerd. The Wendy nerd, I guess.
Yep.
So, all right, let me get back to my show notes again here. So, 70 years ago, two dogs shared a spaghetti kiss thanks to Joe Krantz's 1937 sketches. and Ward Greene's 1945 story, Disney delivered its first CineScope Classic, as I said before, June 22nd, 1955. So this is where our audience watched a Cocker Spaniel and a Scruffy Mutt share spaghetti, and then they went home with their hearts forever tangled.
I think they were probably a little tangled before the spaghetti, but that just kind of sealed the deal.
Yeah. Well, that was like a key scene, which, you know, I do have, of course, some notes and some facts about the film. Should we do some facts first or share some memories? So you actually had a Cocker Spaniel.
I did. Yes. It wasn't a girl. It wasn't a female dog. We had a male dog, and it was a blonde Cocker Spaniel, and his name was King, because if you've ever had a Cocker Spaniel, they kind of are that way. They are the biggest, bravest things out there, just kind of as their personalities. At least that was with King. Yeah.
They're cockies. Cocky cockers.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from. Like where the, you know, spaniel's a type of dog, but I don't know where that first part, the cocker part, comes. Now there's other spaniels, you know, like was it Prince William Spaniel? Prince.
I don't know.
And there's a spaniel that's named after an English prince. And there's like Springer Spaniels, and like there's a whole bunch of different spaniels.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know where the cocker part of Cocker Spaniel comes
from. I don't
know
either. I don't know. I don't know if they were, well, terriers, I guess you would have to go chase rabbits and things out of holes, but I don't know if a spaniel was good for anything like that.
Yeah, they were a hunting dog.
They're kind of small hunting dogs, so I guess you're getting small stuff.
Yeah, so you would be rats and things like that. So, you know, in the movie where they show the rat thing, that was kind of their deal, from what I understand, that, you know, a lot of your lower, shorter bred dogs, that's what they were for, is for those smaller, burrowing, you know, kind of prey animals what they would hunt.
So when's the first time you saw the movie?
So the first time I saw the movie, we actually rented it from the library. So we did not grow up like a lot of people in the 80s, when, you know, getting the cable and the VHS and the Nintendo, you know, when it first came out. So I was actually probably 10 when I saw it. So this is more of like the 90s before I got to see it, because at the time, and here's dating myself, you could rent VHS players.
Yeah.
And you could rent, well, you could do that in the 80s, you could rent the movies. Well, we didn't really get around to it until probably like, I remember my 10th birthday, we rented a VHS and we rented some things, but that's not when we saw it. We saw it a little bit later, but anyway, yeah, we rented it from the library, and oh my gosh,
that'd
like
be more of a checkout than a rental.
Huh?
That'd be more of a checkout than a rental.
Well, okay. Yeah. It's more of a checkout than a rental, but, essentially it was the kind of the same thing. Just you didn't pay for it.
Didn't have to pay anything.
But oh my gosh, like any of those emotional tug at your heartstring moments, I cry. I still do. Like they get to me like right away. And I just something, I don't know if you know, but I have loved Cocker Spaniels since I was a kid.
Yeah. Gee, I hadn't noticed. Every time there's one, right? Oh, it's a cocker.
Well, let me tell you where it came from. We had a little golden book that had a bunch of different dogs in it. And one of the dogs were some spaniel.
Oh, okay.
And
I was about to say the Pokey Little Puppy was not a Cocker Spaniel.
No, Puppy was, seems like more of a hound dog kind of thing.
I know that was one of your favorites.
But no, this was one that had different types of breeds of dogs and stuff, and the Cocker Spaniel, and there was a black one that they pictured in there, and I thought was, you know, just super cute. Well, we got a blonde one. And my aunt and uncle had spaniels, like they when we were really little. And so I always kind of had a soft spot for spaniels and Cocker Spaniels. So when I got to watch this, of course, you know, my heart was all in it for all the reasons why they did. They just played my heart like a fiddle. You know, it's a great movie, and I just love it, and I still cry in all the bits, you know.
I'm trying to think of like how old I was when I first watched it, because it was in the 80s. We were in the house that I spent most of my life in before I got married. But we had a VCR, but it had finally been re-released on video, and so we rented it, and my sister and I swear, I think we watched it like three times, because it's short. It's like an hour and a few minutes. So we watched it like three times through, which kind of was a habit I had. Like The Little Mermaid, when I first rented and watched that, I loved it so much, I rewound it and put it back in and watched it again. You know, but Lady and the Tramp, we watched it like three times. I just absolutely loved it. And even Because you know, Disney would make a big deal when they would re-release something on home video or re-release it in the theaters back when they would, you know, have to recycle stuff because they were keeping the classics alive because you couldn't always see it on TV unless you got the Disney Channel. Then eventually the Disney Channel, you could kind of catch some of these movies. Now you can't. A lot of their old movies are not even on Disney Plus. It's kind of anyways, we won't talk about the failure of not living up to expectations there. But remember in school, I guess hopefully kids still get this, a book or something, but you'd get the little Scholastic little two-page thing.
Those.
And so you'd have all these different books. Well, they had a book adaption of Lady and the Tramp that came out about the same time, and I had just enough change to pay cash. And so I ordered it, put a bunch of change or whatever in an envelope and ordered myself a copy of it so I could read it. And they had all the lyrics to all the songs in the book at the right time. I kind of wish I still had that book. It might be valuable at this point in time. Who knows? It'd be kind of just fun to have it.
Just the memories. But
I read it and read it and read it over and again, because, I mean, you could finish it in a day, you know. So I just loved that book and that movie. It was just so much fun. I always kind of identify with Tramp being a little bit of outcast, because I've always been a Weirdsville. So I kind of got that. So I always liked the character. And, you know, I kind of grew up with dogs. Now I'm more of a cat person than I was a dog person, I think, Aaron. Because we've had so many cats now. So I kind of shifted around, but I just, that's one of my top Disney movies. It's not my overall. I think we've determined that I think that there was some other movie. I thought Beauty and the Beast was my top number one Disney animated, but no, apparently it's Winnie the Pooh. Cause if there's anything with Winnie the Pooh, I'm like, oh, I have to have that now.
So when did that happen?
I guess I've always been a huge fan, cause I've loved Winnie the Pooh anyway. I knew that, but I just realized I don't feel a compulsion to buy Beauty and the Beast merchandise, but Winnie the Pooh stuff. I mean, I have a lunch cup thing. We have that nice little snow globe. Well, not quite. Well, yeah, it's a snow globe where he's sticking in the honey or out of Robert's house. I love Winnie the Pooh.
But so, we do have some Beauty and the Beast stuff. Like, we went to Starlight and you got me a rose.
Yeah. Well, because it's still a good number two.
We've seen that probably as a play more often than probably any other play.
Yeah, yes. Well, not you don't always get the chance. Well, Beauty and the Beast is supposed to be coming into town. Didn't we find that out when we went to the Back to the Future musical that's coming? They're going to do it? Anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Have to go again. Because I do love that one. Not saying, but it's, you know, Lady and the Tramp would probably be like my number three position. Somewhere tied with maybe Peter Pan, perhaps. I don't know. Pretty close. So... But yeah, so just absolutely. Well, you know, Little Mermaid has got to be, I guess, up there. But that's my favorite of the princesses, really, is probably, you know, Ariel. But then Beauty and the Beast was definitely a better movie than, I mean, I love Little Mermaid, but Beauty and the Beast is definitely a better movie, I guess. I don't know. I liked it better. I don't know. Anyways, but yeah, so Lady and the Tramp is definitely up. I have a hard time ranking things. So if something hits like a top level, like, yeah, that's definitely my favorite. And I basically have to observe myself of like, what is it that I it's usually because I get something out of it. And that's why we're sitting at a desk loaded with Aerith figures and Spider-Man figures and Superman figures and stuff. Cause I learned something from these characters. They have influences. Oh, hey, didn't I just mention that before? Look at the new cover art and all these different characters have an influence. Some of my favorite things are something that I get something. I learned something from these.
It's hard for me to pick favorites and rank as well. And I keep making subcategories so that I have like, this is my favorite childhood movie or this is my favorite, you know, amphibian, or this is my favorite woodpecker bird, you know, like I come up with subcategories so I can justify all my favorites.
That'd be one of the movies I could be in the annoying kid. We have to watch the same movie over and over again. Was Lady and the Tramp, you know, was probably one of them. Of course, I did have my habits over the summer. I would watch, like, it was like a daily routine. Sometimes I'd watch The Dark Crystal and The Little Mermaid sometimes, you know, just like, I'm going to watch these two movies, you know, today. This is, you know, like, it was a habit sometimes. So I had my repeat movies. Lady and the Tramp, though, I didn't own a copy, so I couldn't just repeatedly watch it, but I had the book when I was little, and I read that book.
I'm trying to remember if we had a book, because we did have a lot of Disney books that I read before I ever watched the movie, and I don't know if Lady and the Tramp is one of them. I feel like the book sounds familiar, like I can picture things from it, but I don't know if we actually, like, if we actually owned it or not.
This is the story of Lady and the Tramp. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when you hear the chimes ring like this. Let's begin now. One snowy Christmas, Darling received a very special gift from her husband. She unwrapped the brightly wrapped box, and out popped a beautiful little puppy.
Oh, Jim, dear, she's beautiful. I think I'll call her Lady.
Lady had found a very happy home with Darling and Jim Deere. Her afternoons were spent playing in the park with Darling. And later, she would race Jim Deere home from work. One summer day, Jim Deere came home with a surprise for Lady.
Here you are, girl. Your very own collar and license. Why don't you show them off to Jock and Trusty?
Lady trotted proudly next door to see the neighboring dogs.
Notice anything different, Trusty?
Why, Miss Lady, drawled the aging bloodhound, you've got a new collar.
Jock the Scotty added,
Hey, and it looks very expensive.
Later that summer, Lady noticed a change in Jim Deere and Darling. The races home stopped, as did the afternoon walks. Instead, Darling just sat home and knitted. Poor lonely Lady sat outside and wondered why her owners were acting so strangely. The answer came a few weeks later. There was tremendous excitement in the house. Jim Deere happily telephoned his Aunt Sarah.
It's here! And it's a baby! A boy! I'm a daddy!
Lady tiptoed upstairs and peeked carefully into a frilly crib.
Oh, it's the cutest little human I've ever seen. So this is why Jim Deere and Darling were acting so strangely.
Lady rushed outside to tell Jock and Trusty about the beautiful baby. As she talked, a stray dog with no collar or license entered the yard. He sauntered right up to Lady.
Hello, Pigeon. I couldn't help overhearing your conversation, and I think you're all wrong. Why, babies are just cute little bundles of trouble.
Jock had heard about this intruder. His name was Tramp, and he always managed to escape the dog catcher's net. Jock didn't like it.
Off with you now, you mongrel!
When Jim Deere and Darling left for a weekend, Aunt Sarah came to stay with the baby. And much to Lady's dismay, Aunt Sarah had brought along her two Siamese cats. They were troublemakers from the start. One cat headed right for the canary cage, while the other tried to make a meal out of the goldfish. Lady chased after them and spoiled their plans, but not before the cats had made a shambles of the living room. Aunt Sarah came running.
Merciful heavens! Look at this mess!
The two pesky cats pretended to be hurt. Aunt Sarah cuddled them.
Did that wicked dog attack you, my innocent little angels? Well, I know how to take care of that ruffian.
Aunt Sarah didn't waste a moment. She grabbed Lady and marched right down to the local pet shop.
Clerk, I want a muzzle. A good, strong one.
The shopkeeper strapped a heavy muzzle onto Lady's face. It was so tight that she could hardly open her mouth. Lady wiggled out of Aunt Sarah's arms and bolted out of the store in fear. Up one street and down another she fled, trying to escape the horrible muzzle. She soon found herself lost and in a very bad part of town. Three big dogs spotted Lady and gave chase, snarling and snapping, until they had her trapped in a blind alley. As the snarling dogs inched closer to Lady, another dog leaped to her rescue. It was Tramp. Single-handedly, he fought the vicious dogs and sent them yelping away. Then he turned to Lady.
Hey, Pidge, what are you doing on this side of the tracks? I thought you... Huh? A muzzle? Oh, you poor kid. We've got to get that thing off. Come on.
Tramp led Lady to the city zoo. At a pond, they found a beaver struggling to pull a heavy log into the water.
Pardon me, friend. It looks like you need a log puller. I happen to have a handy-dandy one here, modeled by the little lady. Just nip it off and it's yours.
The beaver quickly nibbled through a strap, and Lady was free of the hated muzzle.
Come on, Pidge. Let's find a place to celebrate.
Tramp seemed to be known and welcomed everywhere they went. He had a different place to eat every day of the week.
It's Wednesday, Pidge. That means we go to Tony's restaurant. You'll love it.
Tony had a plate of bones all ready, but when he saw that Tramp had brought a lady friend, he served them a delicious dinner of spaghetti and meatballs. Then Tony took out his accordion and sang a beautiful love song while Lady and Tramp dined by candlelight. Lady marveled at Tramp's carefree life, so different from her own. After the romantic dinner, Lady and Tramp walked through the park to the top of a hill overlooking the city.
Look down there, Pigeon. There's a great big world out there with no fence around it, where two dogs like us could find adventure and excitement.
It sounds wonderful, Tramp, but who would watch over Jim, dear, darling, and the baby?
You win, Pidge. I guess we're just too different.
As he escorted Lady home, Tramp noticed some hens sleeping in a yard.
Hey, let's wake up those fat, lazy biddies.
But won't we hurt them, Tramp?
Nah, we'll just stir them up a bit. It'll be fun.
Tramp raced into the yard, barking wildly. Chickens went fluttering and squawking about until the owner rushed outside with his shotgun.
That's the signal to get out of here, Pidge.
Lady tried to keep up with Tramp as he darted around corners and scrambled over fences, but soon she was lost again. Without warning, the city dog catcher pounced on poor Lady and carted her off to the dog pound.
That Tramp! I never would have guessed he was the type to desert a lady.
Lady had never been so scared and humiliated in all her life. The dingy pound was full of sad, scruffy dogs who stared longingly at her license. They told her that it was her ticket out of there and wished they all had one, too. Soon, Aunt Sarah arrived to take Lady home. But as punishment for running away, she chained her to the doghouse. Poor Lady was feeling lonely and sad when Tramp came trotting into the yard.
Hi, Pidge. I heard what happened. I came over to tell you how sorry I am.
You ran out on me and I took the blame. It was so embarrassing. I never want to see you again. Goodbye.
As Tramp hung his head and turned to leave, Lady spied a big, ugly rat climbing into the baby's window. She tugged on her chain and desperately called for help.
Tramp, hurry! There's a rat in the baby's room!
Tramp raced into the house and up the stairs and burst into the baby's room. The rat was creeping toward the baby's crib. Tramp pounced on the rat and killed it. The noise from Tramp's fight awakened Aunt Sarah. She rushed into the baby's room.
Oh, you vicious brute! Trying to attack the baby!
Aunt Sarah hadn't even seen the rat. She forced Tramp into a closet and locked the door.
Now I'll call the dog catcher and have that brute taken away.
Jock and Trusty watched as Tramp was locked in the dog catcher's wagon.
Well, Trusty, there he goes off to the pound. I was certain he was no good the moment the first laid eyes on him.
Yeah, but I never thought he'd attack a helpless baby.
Just then, Jim Deere and Darling returned home. Lady gave a desperate tug and broke her chain. She ran into the house, barking frantically at Jim Deere.
Look, Darling, Lady's trying to tell us something. What is it, girl?
Lady raced upstairs to the baby's room to show Jim Deere the truth.
Oh, my goodness! Darling, come here!
What is it, Jim? Oh, a rat!
That means that Tramp is actually innocent. He saved the baby. But now he's being taken to the dog pound to be destroyed.
When Jock overheard this, he felt ashamed.
Trusty, we've misjudged Tramp badly. We've got to rescue him.
The two dogs raced after the dog catcher's wagon, barking fiercely. The frightened horses bolted. The wagon overturned, and the door sprang open. Tramp was free. Jim Deere and Darling were so grateful to Tramp that they bought him a collar and license. Now he was part of the family. The next Christmas, Lady and Tramp celebrated with their own family. Four adorable puppies.
So the idea of this actually began in 1937 with artist Joe Grant sketching his Springer Spaniel, which I think that's what you mentioned earlier, which Lady, I guess, was a Springer Spaniel. Or no, his own dog was Lady. And then he pitched that to Walt Disney, and he liked the domestic concept but wanted more action. Now, one of the things that that I have been informed of, the idyllic setting of Lady and the Tramp also is based a little bit more also around Walt's memories of Marceline in that same time period where he grew up is when Lady and the Tramp kind of takes place.
Yeah, I can see that. Having visited Marceline and seen like the old houses and things that were there, I can see that. Yep.
Yep. In 1945, Disney merged Grant's concept with Ward Greene's cosmopolitan short story, Happy Dan, the Cynical Dog, introducing the street smart tramp figure. That's according to Squiggly, which, the other bit of information I was sharing was according to the Daniel Alexander Dysmentia blogspot page with cartoon research. And then while World War II disrupted production, the studio resumed post-war with Green penning a preluding 1953 novel and a formal screenplay, according to Squiggly. Now, this is actually Disney's first animated feature that was in CinemaScope. I don't know much about CinemaScope, but there it was. It demanded broader compositions and reshaped storyboarding. Animators relearned layout techniques to use the widescreen effectively. Now, I don't know CinemaScope what the shape is, because we're used now like 16:9 is kind of our ratio of everything now, except for sometimes you get like some special, like Lord of the Rings is a little bit thinner up top. It's less height and more wide. There is some variety. I don't know exactly what the measurements of CinemaScope would be. There were real dog reference footage that actually helped the good old nine old men animators bring authentic canine movement and breed specific behavior to the film, which, I mean, that's pretty standard. They would go and they would study the animals and learn how people, they would get film of them so they knew how they move. They would do it with people, which is why some people say, oh, Disney was recycling animation. Look at that. That bear dances the same as the other bear. Like, well, that's because the reference animation, the reference video or film that they shot of the person doing the action was the same. So when you draw a new character based on that same film footage you have of that human who's dancing that way, it ends up looking the same. That's why.
Yeah, but it's still good.
Yeah. I mean, someone still has to draw it again.
Yeah. Yeah. The reference, it makes it authentic. I mean, even though we know it's a cartoon, you know, it lends some realism to
that. Now, because not all of the theaters were CinemaScope ready, Disney produced two versions, the widescreen and an Academy aspect ratio, forcing layout artists to adjust key scenes, according to henryford.org. Now, Peggy Lee actually played multiple characters. She played Darling and Peg, of course, we know, and even the Siamese cats. And she actually co-wrote classic songs like He's a Tramp, Bella Notte, and La La Lu, collaborating with Sonny Burke. Peggy Lee wasn't just lip syncing. She co-wrote these songs, voice characters, and helped shape the feline personalities. So now this scene apparently is now controversial because you have, I guess, a stereotype, but they're just cats in a cartoon. Everybody's fair game in a cartoon to be made a little silly of.
My love of Siamese cats came from this.
Yeah, and we had a Siamese kitty cat. I love
Siamese cats. I don't know. There's something about them.
We had a tortoise Siamese kitty.
We did. We have a tortoise Siamese. You wouldn't have guessed it was Siamese because it looked like a calico cat,
but she had the blue eyes. She had the colors.
She had the right.
She's in different places. Mm-hmm. She was the bestest kitty ever.
Yep, that's the one that converted Jeremy from a dog person to a cat person.
I liked cats before. Well, my mother was allergic, so we weren't really able to have cats. And when we did have a cat, that had to be kept downstairs. And that was unfortunate with this white kitty. It was a pretty white kitty that we found in the woods. But I had to keep him locked away in my room downstairs when they moved me into the basement because he couldn't roam around upstairs. I would give him a quick bath. He didn't seem to mind that much. I'm cleaning him. I let him come upstairs a little bit, but I had to keep him away from Mom. So he didn't do well being confined in that. And he chewed through phone cables and he tore through the ceiling and just.
I think he was a young cat also, and they tend to just be full of energy. And
it didn't work out very well. I wish it would have, but I was like, this was probably just not a good idea in this small space. So Heather brought home, and I had two little house finches when we got. But anyway, okay, we're sidetracking. So now we have all these cats. Cats are a lot easier sometimes than dogs. I think they're a lot less destructive in some ways. At least they don't steal your food as much. So anyways, so rare studio footage actually shows Peggy Lee performing He's a Tramp. And her contributions extended well beyond singing. She helped develop character personalities through the music. Now, here's kind of a funny thing. All right, so the spaghetti scene. Now, apparently, people like to say that everybody likes to try this. Have we ever tried to do a spaghetti thing or anything at all? I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
I don't know if it's as common as people think, but...
Depends on how the spaghetti is cooked, like, because it does get very fragile at a certain point.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
That famous spaghetti scene nearly got cut because Walt initially considered it too silly. And then the animator Frank Thomas believed in it so much that he completed the sequence before seeking approval. And then Walt relented and actually became a beloved piece of cinematic history. That's according to WaltDisney.org. So it kind of reminds me a little bit. I don't remember who the animator was where Walt. And it's a really great sequence. And I really wish they'd just go ahead and put it into the movie for Snow White, where they have the fun little. Is it the soup eating scene, I guess, is what got cut. The hand washing's still in there. But there's this fun scene of the dwarves eating their soup. And you can watch it all in line drawing. But they've never just put it back into the movie because they could colorize it because Walt and he brought the animator in and says, your scene looks great, but I really have to get back to the witch.
Was that a song? I feel like it was a song.
Yeah, I think there's a soup eating song and everything song with that it, yeah. got cut. And I'd love to see them just color it in with computers and put it back into the movie and release the animated again and not a live action that nobody wanted.
Length of movies have changed over time. Yeah, they've gotten a lot and a lot longer. I kind of wish
that's even short for length at the time.
Well, I kind of wish that we could go back to shorter movies. Yeah.
An hour and a half instead of a 3.5 hours.
Yeah. A quality 90 minute, over 2+ hours that. Yeah.
Well, you gotta get your money's worth for the money you spend to go into a theater.
Yeah.
So at release on June 22nd of 1955, it became the 15th animated Disney feature distributed by Buena Vista after parting from RKO, according to Daily Motion. The film saw multiple theatrical reissues in 1962, 1972, 1980, 1986. And I think it was after the 1986 release in the theaters that because usually they put it in the theater for a while and then they release it in the nice white jewel case.
Yeah. We had some of those.
And so about 87, I might have been about 10 years old.
When
that came out there. Well, when you saw it, but you're
I was 10 when I saw it, but the reissue that was the closest.
1986, you would not have been 10 years old.
No, I would have been 6.
So, yeah. And also in 2013, I don't remember it being released in theaters in 2013. I would have went. And it was a pivotal in home entertainment formats like VHS, Laserdisc, Blu-ray, and digital. In 2023, it was recognized by the Library of Congress for its cultural, historical, and aesthetic significance. And its legacy-inspired sequel, Scamp's Adventure, which I didn't see. We won't even talk about the 2019 live-action travesty. There's been theme park media and countless homages in pop culture from Simpsons parodies to Rugrats tributes. I didn't watch Rugrats, did you?
No.
I think I was too old for Rugrats. No. I know the kids really like it, but yeah, so I don't know about... I can see the Simpsons doing little jokes. Heck, well, Futurama, though, did their own dog thing where they had Fry had a dog that kind of got left behind and waited for Fry.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh, that episode rips you up.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
I feel like I'm re-experiencing the trauma of watching that episode and just.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. But yeah, it's such a great movie. And the lots of different. I like the variety of characters. Everybody's very unique as you have because he's a little Irish, and we had a dog kind of similar to Jock there. We had a Zach, which if you don't trim him, he gets kind of fuzzy. But having that, well, I guess he's more Scottish than Irish. But and then of course you had old Trusty, the old police dog.
I liked him.
But they had just everybody had like different accents based upon what kind of dog they were, and so every dog was different. The characters were all unique, and.
They're fun.
It was
fun.
Yep.
It wasn't so over top to make it, I don't know, cheesy.
Yeah.
But just enough to be like, oh yeah, that's a Scottish Terrier. Oh yeah,
it works well. I can't.
Yeah,
do it.
And the beaver with his beaver. Little. I love that. That beaver character. It's the same voice that does the gopher and Pooh. Not in the book.
Yep. And not in the book. Yes, the just great characters, great voices, great performance. The animation is beautiful. The opening is amazing. Yeah. And even like the song, I'm going to want to go watch this while we go eat something here when we're done recording.
Okay.
I think I want to watch it again, and not off of Disney Plus because they might have edited it. I don't trust Disney Plus, but I have a copy I don't know if I have it on a Blu-ray or just a DVD, but either way, I think I'm going to pull it out and watch it when we get done here. Work. Which is a good time to wrap this up, I'd say. Let's just hope and remind you all to go to about Podgagement and neverlandpodcast.com. I'm going to delete the echo by turning your mic off. There we go. So Podgagement, you'll find that at neverlandpodcast.com. That is award-winning podcaster Daniel J. Lewis's fantastic company. If you happen to have a podcast, you want to get your reviews directly into your inbox, he will make sure it happens, and a lot of other great features to help you grow your podcast. I'm not even sure I'm using it to its full extent right now, but you go in there, you click in there, he sets you up a nice account. I get a little kickback and it helps me out, and so I appreciate it. We do want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of The Wilhite and Wall Show for helping out with the introduction. Don't forget to email us, podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. When's the first time you saw Lady and the Tramp? What is your favorite Beach Boys song? Did you happen to go see How to Train Your Dragon? What were your thoughts on it? Send us an email and let me know. We're also on X.com, Neverland PCast. Don't forget to find us on Facebook at the Fandom Nexus. You can find the fan page to just hit like, which is fine, but we have more fun over in the Facebook group. But in order to find that, you'll have to look for under groups, Neverland Podcast, because I couldn't change it. You can officially join in the Neverlanders on neverlandpodcast.com by choosing yourself a nickname. Become a Lost Boy or Pixie. Why Pixies? Because girls are too clever and they don't get lost. Don't forget, of course, we do have a Patreon page. You can find links there right there in the show notes or on the website, patreon.com/neverlandpodcast. No copyright infringement is intended, and copyright is held by the respective owners. Content is shared for review and commentary purposes under fair use license. And now, just like a dog, we had a dog, a husky, that ran away all the time. Get lost. In an adventure! But come back in time for dinner, because, you know, dogs know where the food is.